stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Three, four, seven, six, seven, seven, 1-8-3-5. It's 347-677-1835. If you want to get involved in tonight's show, Keith Carmichael will be along in a bit. We'll talk about Convention of the States. Read in the news this week that Tennessee's legislature had called for a convention of states. Tennessee's call was specifically a convention to discuss the balanced budget amendment. They narrowed their call to one amendment, the balanced budget amendment. We have Lloyd Thomas Sloan up in Jefferson City working hard for just such a one amendment call for convention. That amendment is the state repeal amendment. We've talked about that frequently on the show. We'll have Lloyd back here in the next couple of weeks, and we'll talk about that again. We'll see how that campaign is going. Keith Carmichael, director of the Missouri Convention of States Project, Missouri Liberty Amendments Project, will be along tonight. They have a bill moving through the House now. In fact, HCR 41, call to convention, is having public hearing on Tuesday. If you can't make it to Jefferson City for the public hearing on Tuesday, Keith will certainly tell you how you can get your input before that committee. But we want to set that committee up, so I'm going to really quickly, while we're waiting for Keith, give you the contact information for that committee and the members of that committee. You need to be calling at least the chairman and vice chairman of the committee personally on the telephone, and you need to be emailing them and everyone between now and Tuesday, well, for that matter, even after Tuesday, because after the public hearing, it will be a while before they have the executive session and then in committee either vote that thing out, do pass, or let it die. We want to make sure that they vote that out of committee and onto the floor for debate. It's the General Laws Committee. Chairman of that committee is Caleb Jones. Good man. We'll get a fair hearing out of that committee. Caleb Jones' phone number in Jeff City is 573-751-2134. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to grab your pencil because I'm going to give you all the members of that committee here, so you'll want to jot those down so you can get those emails running tonight or tomorrow for Tuesday's hearing. Caleb Jones is the chairman of the committee. His phone number is 573-751-2134. The vice chair of that committee is another good man, Todd Richardson. He's at 573-751-4039. Mike Colonna is on that committee. And for the rest of these committee members, I'm just going to have you email them. So all of these emails are firstname.lastname@house.mo.gov. So it'll be, for Caleb Jones, for example, it'll be Caleb.Jones, caleb.jones at house.mo.gov. Now, all of the email addresses are at house.mo.gov, so I'm just going to give you the names from here on out, and you'll know that it's first name dot last name at mo dot, or house.mo.gov. So Todd Richardson is T-O-D-D dot R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S-O-N, common spelling for Todd, common spelling for Richardson. Mike Colonna is M-I-K-E, common spelling for Mike, C-O-L-O-N-A. Gary Cross, common spelling for both, Gary, G-A-R-Y, Cross, C-R-O-S-S, Gary.Cross. Courtney Allen Curtis, and in Courtney's case, the middle name, of course, is not part of the email address, so it's Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y, common spelling, Curtis, C-U-R-T-I-S. Dan Gosson, or Gosson, I'm sorry, that's Don, common spelling, Don, D-O-N, dot Gosson, G-O-S-E-N. Elijah Haar, good man, E-L-I-J-A-H, and H-A-A-H-R is Elijah's last name. That's H-A-A-H-R, Elijah.Haar. Ron.Hicks, Ron Hicks, common spelling Ron, R-O-N, common spelling Hicks, H-I-C-K-S. Jay Houghton, or Hutton, J-A-Y dot H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. Jeremy dot Lefavor, J-E-R-E-M-Y dot L-A-F-A-V-E-R. John McCarty, J-O-H-N, common spelling John dot M-C-C-A-H-E-R-T-Y. Tom dot McDonald, common spelling both, Tom, T-O-M dot M-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. Rocky Miller, common spelling, R-O-C-K-Y dot M-I-L-L-E-R. Mark Parkinson, common spelling Mark, M-A-R-K dot P-A-R-K-I-N-S-O-N. Keep your pencils up for two more names. Dwight Scharnhorst, D-W-I-G-H-T dot S-C-H-A-R-N-H-O-R-S-T. Stephen dot Weber. Stephen is S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Weber's W-E-B-B-E-R. These are all the members of the General Laws Committee. If you couldn't keep up with your pencil, go to house.mo.gov, click on Committees, find General Laws in the pull-down menu at Committees, and it will give you all the names. The email address for any member of the House of Representatives is first name, dot last name at house.mo.gov. And to repeat one more time, Caleb Jones, the chairman, is at 573-751-2134. Todd Richardson is the vice chair, is at 573-751-4034. I understand Ferris is going to be in town. It's going to be a good hearing. It's going to be a good hearing just to hear, if you can make it to Jeff City, just to hear what's going on. Be a good hearing to get your input on, if you'd like to go to Jeff City and have some input. I believe Keith's with us now, so he'll tell you how you can get your voice heard if you're not going to be able to make it to Jeff City. Hello, Keith. Is that you?
Good evening.
Hey, how you doing?
I tell you what a beautiful day it's been, and a beautiful afternoon in Missouri. Good to be on Blog Talk Radio this evening.
So, Tennessee legislature this week passed a call to convention. Did you hear that?
You know, it's just really all almost been all I can do to keep up with all of those. It's just one right after another at this point,
yeah.
And really moving.
Tennessee's call was a single amendment call. They called and commissioned only for a balanced budget amendment. What are we going to do if you know, we get the 38 states, the 34 states, but the convention calls aren't exactly the same?
Well, technically, I guess there will be people who will say we're already there. I mean, if you talk to
people,
they will say we're there already. And I'm not the expert when it comes to at that level. I mean, there's folks who know a lot more about the history and really the current number of calls and categories. That's why we at Convention of States have tried to make what we would call exact and operative language in every state that we're working in. So when it gets there, I mean, there are three paragraphs that are specific and unchanged in every state thus far that entail, you know, restraining the power, jurisdiction, and scope of the federal government. And they mentioned fiscal restraints as well as term limits.
Good.
But those paragraphs are operatively the same, so there won't be any difficulty in aggregating them. In other words, there can't
right.
be any legal challenges to them anyway.
Good. So with that specific phraseology, how many states are on board at this time, Keith?
Well, it's interesting. I'm going to give you the list here if I can. I was going to give you the official, and there's been so much moving today that I've – here we go. Let's see. The official is states going through committee thus far. Let's just start. States, obviously Georgia has passed both House and the Senate. Alabama, Arizona, of course Missouri, South Carolina, and Florida are going through committee at this particular time.
Excuse me.
There are a number of states. You're fine. I need to have one of those too. There are a number of them. I believe it's Alaska, Alabama, Arizona, and passed in one house or the other already. So we're not all the way through anywhere but Georgia. But there's some states that either have deferred it or don't have any type of legislative session going on right now. For example, Louisiana, Oklahoma, New Mexico, South Dakota, West Virginia, and Virginia are in that category. Either it's been laid on the table, you know, they'll have to bring it up next session, or they'll have to bring it up when they have a session. But those are the newest list of what's going on nationally. And I didn't really answer your question a while ago. You asked what will we do. Like I tried to indicate, there's folks who feel that we're already there on balanced budget, or in some cases, but they're just not the same. They're not aggregatable. And so that's one thing that we're trying to avoid at Convention of States, is having a situation where these calls are different or cannot be aggregated.
Exactly. So let's get a little closer to home, Keith. We have a House hearing coming up Tuesday. I heard it rumored from Mike last night on our show that it's possible Ferris will be in town. Do you know that that's a fact?
It is right now without any changes. And in other words, the plans are, and the plane tickets are purchased. The hotel rooms are reserved. So unless there's something beyond our control, that's what we're hoping on.
Right.
And that's once again, I'm sure you gave it at the beginning of the hour. I heard you going through the committee chairman and the committee members, and I certainly appreciate that information. And I hope folks will. There's still plenty of time to send those folks an email with your support or with your thoughts, one way or the other. It's Tuesday, April 1st, of course, 12 o'clock noon in the House hearing room number 7. Now, you will not find that listed anywhere at this point. It's not officially on the docket on the website, but it came from from the chairman himself, the
right.
time and the place. So we're gonna take him at his word and go with the information that we have thus far.
Good. Have you and Mike sat down and done any vote counting yet on this committee?
We have kind of left the vote counting to the chairman. And we're very comfortable with the way the committee is. You know, there are some folks who are continuing to tell their constituents that they haven't made up their mind yet. But the folks who know them day in and day out say, you know, they're probably not going to vote for this. There's several of those folks, obviously, and we won't call them by name, obviously. But if you have a constituent that tells you that he hasn't made up his mind yet, chances are he has, but he doesn't really want to get into the really depth of the discussion with you. I mean, I think that's fair to say. But if your representative or the person on the phone tells you that he has made up his mind and he supports it, in most cases, he's not likely to change his mind.
Okay, and so after all that is said and done, how do we feel about this in this committee? I feel pretty good. As I look at the names,
I feel really good. I mean,
I haven't talked to them, and I haven't done any serious vote polling myself. But as I look at the names on this committee, I feel pretty
right.
good about.
Really, you know, there were several people who you would say would be real solid.
Uh-huh.
That early on were very cautious, and that's the nature of this issue. But as we've discussed with them and talked with them, I think most people who had reservation and had some consideration have gone and done some of their homework. I think most of the time, I would be safe to say that the folks who had that were very cautious have come to realize that the process itself is the safeguard. And you and I have talked about this. We've talked about it on your show. We've talked about it a number of times. But unless you've really taken the time to research it, you have to wonder. And someone who's in the business of radio, we all know Beth Ann, Common
yeah.
Sense Radio. I think she moved from fearful to cautious this week on her show. She said, I've moved my position. I've changed. I was fearful. Now I'm cautious. And there's certainly nothing wrong with being cautious in any regard. And for those folks who are cautious still, we have a companion bill, House Bill 2036.
Right.
Which outlines.
Also in general laws, but not scheduled, not on the calendar yet, by the way.
Exactly.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not right behind this bill in order. I'm not going to say, I mean, I have no way to know that. But I know that it was not scheduled. The way things were kind of moved around and everybody understood that it didn't make a lot of sense, or should I put it this way, it makes more sense to bring these bills and discuss them fairly close together. In other words,
yes.
one without the other.
But at the same time, 2036 is meaningless without 41.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And 2036 requires the governor's signature, which, you know, we don't know what his temperature will be on that. And frankly, you know, I'm a person who's studied this, I won't say at great length. People who know me will say that I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but when I put my head to something and decide to focus on something, I dig in pretty hard, and I ask a lot of the questions that need to be asked personally. Not going to approach anything without lots of skepticism of my own. But I
right.
came to this program, to this process, hearing people like Rob Nadelson say, hey, when I started studying this, I thought it was a constitutional convention. I didn't think it could be limited. You know, he's wrote articles and articles. He's researched it farther back than you and I can even imagine. And in terms of reading the letters of some of these men to their wives in order to gain a better understanding of what they were seeking to do with Article 5. So, I mean, that's way back there, original sources. And here he comes and he says, okay, I was wrong. I was completely wrong. when I thought that. And then he's not alone. Nearly everybody who has written on this started off in the camp which I just described, and today those men, and there is a woman, and I can't call her name, and I need to go back and have that available for you sometime. And there is a woman who's written quite a bit as well, but they're in this camp that the process itself is the safeguard. And I don't want to go spend a lot of time, but what I mean is if we will study this process from beginning to end and realize, first of all, Dave, if there's anything this country needs, it's for people, it's for men and women of respect who are respected by their state leaders, who are selected for their knowledge of the Constitution, for their character, for their fairness. There's a great need for those people to come together in a room, dare I say a convention, and lock out the media and lock out the noise and begin to propose solutions, yes, propose amendments to solve some of the problems that we have. If there's anything we need today, it's that. Now, we just have to learn not to be afraid, not to be fearful. This process, from beginning to end, historically, legally, in every fashion itself, right down to the text of the Article 5 itself, which outlines the process itself is the safeguard. I tell folks, the federal government is the bully. He's in the playground. We can either unilaterally disarm, we can go out on the playground and say, you know, I give up. You can continue to bully me. You can continue bully me for the rest of the semester, for the rest of my life. Or I can go out in the playground and I can say, you know, someone's given me some tools that I can stand up on equal footing with this bully and I can put him back in my box, in his box. Now, are we going to unilaterally disarm because we're scared to pick up the tools, or are we going to go forward? I say go forward. Our children's, our grandchildren, and their children's future and their liberty depend on it.
Read a study this week in, I believe it was Wall Street Journal, may have been Money Magazine, that said that at the rate we are currently going, our grandchildren, that is two generations down from you and me, will be giving the federal government 80 cents of every dollar they make.
I've got that graph, and I show it in every presentation that I do. And I put a line on today. And after I showed a picture of my granddaughters, who will be 30 and 2040, Dave, I show the line of 2040, of the spending and of the interest. And then I show another line, and I say, you know, this granddaughter of mine, let's say that she has a daughter of her own when she's 24. That young lady will turn 30 in 2064. If
right.
We look at the graphs, if we look at the numbers, we will stop what we're doing and begin to plan a strategy. We
absolutely
have to do it.
And this is it, isn't it?
It's a start. You know, there's no magic bullet. And I think I don't want to be guilty of trying to put that out there, and I've heard people say that. There is no magic bullet that's going to solve all of our problems. I mean, I like Lloyd Sloan's State Repeal Act, don't get me wrong. I think it's got a lot of potential for solving problems. I like Ferris's take on reestablishing the correct interpretation of how the Commerce Clause and the General Welfare Clause are interpreted in our government. And should we start down that road, either one of those roads, we can make some progress and we can give our kids some hope.
There's, Absolutely.
the future generations are the voiceless victims. They're the ones who will be paying this bill, and they don't get to vote. We have to be their voice. And that's why I'm hoping that no matter what you're doing this next week, that you'll make plans to be in hearing room number 7 in the House conference room and be a part of the Article 5 Convention of States. That's HCR 41. Be at the hearing. Take a stand. Even if you're not ready to testify, just be there and say, you know, there is something we can do, and I did it. I at least took the first step. I was there, and I was supporting this resolution.
All right, it's noon on Tuesday. Now, I'm going to put out the word right now to you listeners. I work all night Monday night, and I have to go back and work all night Tuesday night. If someone from Springfield is driving, I would love to go. But I can't get off work in the morning, drive to Jeff City, sit the hearing, turn around and drive back, and then go to work Tuesday night. If someone in Springfield is driving up, on Tuesday, I'd love to go. Get a hold of me at Facebook, email me court@att.net, and let me know. I'd be welcome to ride with you, and I would love to go, but I just can't make the drive safely. So,
David, one other thing, there's a number of folks. You got a break coming, or is that we got a minute?
No, yeah, my time is your time tonight.
I just know that we have Missouri Liberty Amendments Project on Facebook, and we're using that to post exactly what you just said, Dave. There's folks from the outstate, whether you're in St. Joe, whether you're in, you know, St. Louis, or whether you're in Springfield or Joplin. If you're like Dave and you're driving and you have room, or if you need a ride, go to Missouri Liberty Amendments Project and just Facebook page, Missouri Liberty Amendments Project. That's four words. You've got to use all four sometimes to get it on the Facebook page, and just say, going to Jeff's, you know, just write on. Just make a post and leave information that you feel comfortable leaving so people can at least contact you. And we're putting some of those together. And I may have a ride with a car for you, Dave, if you don't have one by Monday morning, will see me. So,
Okay. I'll do that. I would love to go. I've never met Mr. Ferris, and I would love to do that. So I'll probably find you and get an introduction. Now, Keith, real quick before the break, and then we'll come back to some other stuff after the break. Mike, of course, sponsored this bill in the House and is handling it there. Do we have yet a handler in the Senate for when it goes across the hall?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I am really happy to be able to announce that we do, and the person who's agreed to handle it in the Senate is Ed Emery.
Oh wow!
Ed
yeah,
is really respected. This is right down his alley, Constitution, and he contacted Mike a few weeks ago. I haven't talked to him personally about it, but Mike let me know, and I said, you know, is this something we can, you know, visit about publicly? And he said absolutely. So that was good.
Might call Ed's office. I talked to Ed for a couple of hours back during his campaign. I might give his office a call and see if he won't join us on a show sometime in the next couple of weeks. Because I personally am looking for this thing. Of course, now once it gets out of general laws, it has to go to the Rules Committee, but that's more of a formality. If it gets out of general laws, do pass, and then it'll go to the House floor. I personally am looking for that to happen in the next week or week and a half. I'm going to project that this thing is on the House floor for debate by two Mondays from tonight. I don't know what that date is, but I think I'm sitting here looking at the names on this General Laws Committee, and I think that this is a go. And I'm really, really, really excited, Keith.
Be the 14th. You're saying You're saying roughly halfway through April 14th or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's about necessary, Keith, to get it over to the other side of the hall and get
exactly.
all this done over again before the session ends.
We hope you're right, and we think you're right. Not, I mean, there are laws that obviously there are bills of resolutions that obviously have this many sponsors, and I'm sure there's some that have the Speaker of the House and the floor leader, but there's not that many that have all that going for it, and so we feel pretty comfortable as well. The chairman has been real positive. He said, I believe this has come to the right committee, and he knows his committee members pretty well.
Yeah.
And we're not getting any negative vibrations from anywhere other than where you might expect it, obviously. So.
Yeah, I talked to we had Mike on last night. Of course, we have him on Friday nights, and we talked about his bill. 476, the article mm-hmm. of impeachment. I was really disappointed, and I really, really feel like Mike got sabotaged by that thing being sent to judiciary instead of general laws. I really like the membership in general laws. I haven't vote counted or talked to anyone before you tonight that has come close to vote counting, but just looking at the names in general laws, I feel real good about this. Now, has anyone looked out to the larger floor and taken a kind of unscientific poll of how we're going to do out there?
I would have to say that there's a couple people who have talked about it and just looked at it, but frankly, we're just taking it one step at a time.
Okay,
and,
good.
You got to get to that point before you go on, and I don't have any information to that. I would have to say that, as I've told you before, this is it's not been that long. I'm pretty new at this. I was one of those people that thought self-governance was okay as long as somebody else was doing it. And I've woken up, but when you wake up and you begin to educate yourself, there's a learning curve, and I couldn't have a better group of folks to work with than Mike Moon, John Putnam,
a
number of other legislators who have been really helpful, and some of those folks who actually are on co-sponsors are right there. Their names are right there. You know who they are.
Exactly. And you're keeping good company. When you're with that crowd, and they're keeping good company when they're with you, no doubt about it. What is the bigger picture? I mean, who should the listeners, or where should the listeners go to? Aside from tuning in here, which they should do every Friday and Saturday night, and we'll have you back as frequently as you can come. And would like to keep us posted on what's happening in the rest of the states. But
sure.
Where can the listeners go to keep up with that information?
That's a great question. And that's really the best question because I wish I could just be electronically pass everybody out a card. I have a card that I pass out when I do a presentation, and it's pretty simple. It has a website on it. And I say, this is great because I can tell people where to go. I've always wanted to do that. So now I can tell people where to go. It's conventionofstates.com.
Okay.
And when you go on that, it's a beautiful website, blue, conventionofstates.com. Now, what you do then is don't just put your email on there and say, I want to get a email update. Click on Take Action. Now, I think I'm pretty safe, Dave, that just to be able to say that people who listen to this program, They're take action people anyway. They're not just along for the ride. They're listening to this program because they care, because they have interest. So take action, and when you do that, you click on take action, and you go to what's called the Action Center, and there's a green button. You just click on there, and you join. You fill out a profile, and really all you're saying is, I want to keep abreast of what's going on with this issue. And you will automatically be placed in Missouri. When I send out a statewide message or John Putnam sends out a statewide message, it goes right to you by email. These emails and your information is never sold, it's never shared, it's never, this is information that you can feel safely put it in the system. And you'll keep track of knowing when the hearings are, who to call, and so on. Now, when you look at the big picture, obviously most of the folks who listen to your program, Dave, I'm sure they already know, you know, as you said one time, they know who their legislators are. Otherwise, they would be over on the other channel. They know who their legislators are. But get to know them better. And you know, March 25th was the deadline to get involved in your precinct as a precinct captain. I hope you didn't let that go by. But if you did, well, then I hope you'll learn that local is everything and learn to get involved with your local, whatever part of the government, you know, local precinct, local county. And because it's a little embarrassing, really, to call your state legislator, try to find out who he is, and he doesn't know you. If you're involved in local politics and you're doing your part as a self-governance, they'll know who you are. They'll come looking for you, and they'll want your feedback and your input if they're good, solid legislators.
That's absolutely right, Keith. I couldn't have said that better myself, and wouldn't even try. We're going to take a little break now. Keith, when we come back, if you can stick with us through another segment,
sure.
we've covered that. What we started out to cover tonight, and we'll review this information from the first segment again before we let Keith go briefly and in summary. But when we come back, we do have first time listeners tonight, and so I'd like to go back to the beginning with you, and let's just quickly review what the Convention of the States is, what it's all about, where it comes from, and we're not going to spend a whole hour on it tonight like we did the first couple of times we talked about it, but Convention of the States is and continues to be and will continue until it becomes a reality to be a matter of education. And in some cases, persuasion. And so for any first-time listeners or any of our folks out there who are still on the wall, I would like to, one more time with you and your extensive knowledge of this, go through exactly what it is we're talking about when we say the words Convention of States. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Come the RJ. Come the
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Let me hear you say, my love,
sir. One of my favorite fade-ins right there. Okay, Keith Carmichael's with us. Keith is director of the Missouri Convention of States Project. Did I say that right, Keith?
Well, there is a coalition is the director, and technically we don't have a director in Missouri, so between John Putnam and I as a legislative liaison, and I'm the coalition's director, we
get her done.
Everything is going so smooth that they didn't want to upset the apple cart, and so that's the team
right
now. We're be more than happy to have a director. I'm sure there's some folks out there who would apply and be more talented and with more qualifications than I have. But
I can't imagine that. But speaking of your knowledge, and I certainly admire and respect your knowledge on this. On this subject, give the listeners a quick summary, because we've gone through the whole history in detail.
Sure.
Many times in the past, and folks, you can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, the webpage, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can click on the MGC radio button in the top. And you can go back and listen to any of our old shows with Keith Carmichael. They're all easily identifiable by the title of the show. So if you want a really in-depth and detailed account of how we got Article 5 of the Constitution, how we use Article 5 of the Constitution, why we need Article 5 of the Constitution, if you want the real detailed version, the scholarly version, then go to any one of those shows and hear Keith expound on how that works. But give us a summary.
I've got one more thing that I want to suggest that people do, because you know we're not going to be able to cover everything that we'd like to, and time is a limited commodity here. And we mentioned the website conventionofstates.com.
Okay.
If you haven't gone there, I sure urge folks who are interested to go there, because there's a category. Just says learn, and as you put your cursor over the top of learn, you get the problem, the solution, a number of things, but down at the bottom is frequently asked questions. And so if you have a question, I'd almost guarantee that your question has already been asked by somebody, and in some cases has been addressed. There's I didn't count them, but there's a lot of questions that have been addressed, and I just want to mention a few of them. Why do we want to call a convention of states? What is a convention of states? How do the state legislators call a convention of states? Can Congress block a convention? Article 5 says Congress calls the convention. Does that mean they control the convention? And so on. How do states choose their delegates? What happens in a convention of states? So I could go on and on, but if you're curious and want to learn those things, those are under the tab Learn on Convention of States. I want you to encourage you to go ahead and download the handbook, which has got a lot of this information in it. And then if you'd like to rather listen instead of just read, let's say you're a person who you have time maybe to listen, you can download underneath the toolkit, which is right there on the homepage, underneath Learn, you can download what's called The Real Deal. And that's a three-part series with Ferris, Rob Nadelson, and also Mark Meckler. And so if you're a person that likes to listen and soak up those things, that's a suggestion. If you really want to get into the depths of it, Rob Nadelson has written a number of detailed, scholarly papers, and those are available. If you go on, let's say, Missouri Liberty Amendments Project and send me a message, or I'll give you my email right now. It's MWC, that's Mary William Charlie, at CenturyTel.net, CenturyTel.net. I'll send you all of those papers in a form that where it's highlighted the key points there, and I'll just email them to you one at a time so you can really get into the depth of this issue. But this is a process that requires. I just want to, Dave, in the time we have here, I want to kind of give you, if you're willing to take a minute. Extra minute. I'm gonna read my testimony that I'm gonna give at the hearing. Not everybody will be there.
Go for it.
Are you with me?
I'm with you. I want you to I want you to educate us tonight and let
sure.
us know what we need to do. So yeah, I think this is very, very good.
I'm gonna sit down and talk to the chairman and the members of this committee, and I'm gonna say the president may have a pen and a phone, but on September 15th, 1787, the framers of our Constitution voted unanimously to give you as a member of a state legislature something much more important. They voted to give the states equal power with Congress in proposing amendments to the Constitution of the United States. They provided this process, and they promised it to be a remedy for such an occasion as we have today, a massive, broken, coercive, unresponsive federal government. Since then, all 27 of the amendments of the Constitution that have been ratified have been proposed by Congress. The only time Congress has ever proposed amendments limiting their own power was under a threat of a convention of states. What did we get as a result? The Bill of Rights. Where would we be today without the Bill of Rights? Since that time, Congress has never again proposed, nor are they likely to ever again propose, amendments that will curtail their own power. That responsibility rests upon the states, and more specifically upon state legislatures. Today, the responsibility to make sure Missouri does its part to initiate this amending process rests upon you, if you're a Missouri legislature. I'll be there on Tuesday in support of HCR 41.
Good.
I'll be there on behalf of my grandchildren to ask that those legislators support Missouri's application for an Article 5 convention for proposing amendments in order to restrain the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. And I'll be there to ask them to do everything they can to see that it is passed to completion. Why? Because I believe our children's future and liberty hang in the balance. Unless you think that demographic and cultural change trajectories are headed in the right direction, we need to do this now. Time is not on our side. Doing nothing leaves us under a constant threat of a standing, ongoing, runaway constitutional convention every day Congress is in session. Leaving this runaway federal government unchecked is a very poor strategy. If our founders were with us here today, I don't think they would be surprised at the imbalance of power today in which the states are almost like agencies of the federal government. Those who were great students of history actually predicted and feared it would be the case. They would likely argue that we have this situation today because we have never used the main tool they gave us to balance the power between the federal government and the states. We've never used the second part of Article 5. It's time to use it. It's past time. In fact, I believe that if this is not the time to use the framers' core mechanism to balance the power between the states and the federal government, there will never be one. I believe that you not only have the historic opportunity to do your part in this process as a state legislator, I hope that you will see that you also have the obligation to do it. Those who oppose this process don't have a strategy. They don't have answers. They don't have a plan. They just have fear. Adopting a strategy to unilaterally disarm and not use Article 5 out of fear gives us a Constitution without it, which is not the Constitution that was ratified, and it's not the Constitution that you and many Americans have sworn an oath to uphold and have died to protect. What this country needs is for a group of respected men and women selected by each state for their knowledge of the Constitution, fairness and character, and devotion to states' rights, to get in a room, dare I call it a convention, to lock out the media and all the noise, work together to propose real solutions to real problems, real amendments to restrain the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. If you've done the research, then you know that the process itself is the safeguard. As you consider your vote on HCR 41, I urge you to trust the framers of this marvelous document one more time. Respectfully, Keith Carmichael.
Wow. Yeah. You hit a lot of nails right on the head there. The one toward the middle there that I'd like to bring home to listeners, and I say this because, as you and I have discussed before, listeners, you like this idea, you want this thing to happen, but daily you go out into the streets of our fair state, and you run into a constant barrage of people who call themselves conservatives. Now when you run into progressives, just dismiss it, okay? They're never going to agree. They want a stronger federal government. They want federal supremacy in every little thing. But you're going to run into this group of people who call themselves conservatives who are going to try to tell you that this is a bad idea. And something Keith said there in his testimony is something that ought to hit home with you. And that is the simple question, okay, what's your idea on how we ought to do this? What's your strategy? What's your plan? You complain about the federal government. You complain about federal overreach. They're strangling you. You know what's happening to your children and grandchildren. What's your plan? And without fail, what do they say, Keith?
Oh, we're going to keep doing the same thing we've been doing. We're going to try to elect good conservative leaders. And
yeah.
And that's true. We need to. I don't want to. We've got to continue to do that.
We do. We do.
Don't want to belittle that. But on the other hand, if we think the election of 2014 or 2016 is going to give us our Constitution back, we're wrong.
Right.
All that we'll get if we elect the Republicans I know, without solid structural changes, will be a slow slide, just a little bit slower slide into the abyss. And I agree with Nick Dranius, who is on a very similar mission, on a very similar topic, and he says, you know, he's primarily about the balanced budget amendment. And he says, you know, if we wait another 3 to 7 years, it won't be a balanced budget amendment. It will be a bankruptcy amendment.
That's right. Okay. So that's Tuesday at noon in Jefferson City, room 7, you said?
Room 7.
Right. In Jefferson City, room 7. If you're not used to Jefferson City, if you've never been to the Capitol before, or if you've been there and just aren't sure how to find your way around, there's a person that sits right there at the front door that will point you to room 7. I'm sure you'll find, without any trouble, Keith or Mike Moon, myself, I hope, or any number of people you know who will help you find room 7.
Parking's always a challenge, and I'm new to that, but I learned real fast. I got a couple. You can feed the meters, or you can find a parking spot. If you can't be there early, I recommend that you come early, and you know, you have maybe some other things you might be able to do in the morning. You might just go by, you know, something you can do on Monday, perhaps. And I'm just saying perhaps. You might schedule an appointment with your own local legislature and go by on Tuesday morning and just go in and just make yourself known and let them know that you're involved in the process. You don't have to bring up this bill. You might talk about it, but my point is just get in the door and get used to going in your legislator's office and learn their names, learn the people who are in their office, learn their names. And my point is just go early, and you're there already. You're going to have a lot better parking spot if you get there early in the morning. But there is parking. I want to tell you where that is. It's two blocks. 2.5 blocks walk. There is the corner of Capitol. Let's see, it's east of the Capitol on the corner of Madison and East Capitol Avenue. There's a parking garage, and it's you know that's fairly convenient for some folks. But you want to go in on the northwest corner off of Main Street, and that'll put you right. You'll come in right in by the cafeteria, and most of those hearing rooms are right on that main level, right there by the cafeteria.
And it never hurts to get to Jefferson City early because some of the best eats in the state are in Jefferson City. So right around the Capitol there, you're going to find plenty of good places to grab a meal. Or, you know, if you get there at 10 or 9 in the morning, you've got time for two or three meals before the hearing. And if you're like me, you might just do that. We're going to see who this caller is, Keith, and then we'll see if we got something good to talk about. Hello, caller. It's Dave. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Thank you, Dave, for allowing me on your show. I was going through the internet and looking at different radio shows, and I was looking at your webpage and looking at which part of let's see here. What do you got? You said please forgive me.
It's all right.
Where
are you calling from?
First, I'm calling from Reno, Nevada.
Oh, okay.
I was just interested in the amendment. There you go. Which amendment would you like to talk about? And I apologize for missing the first part of your show. I just seen that you guys started, right? Or how long you been on?
We came on at 7 hour in Missouri time, so we came on at 6 o'clock your time.
Oh, okay. The show me state.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Dave, let me introduce myself. My name is Joanne Spotted Bear. I'm a law advocate, assistant judge, and the Tetuan Treaty representative, talking to 14 ambassadors around the world.
Uh-huh.
And I have a question that I'd like to address that's very important, and it's flowing worldwide. I myself on Facebook am gaining more and more people every day, and I think I'm pretty close to about 2 million people. I'm originally a descendant of the Little Bighorn, the Wounded Knee Massacre, World War I, World War II, 1973 when the Lakota Sioux went against the federal government. My dad was a cop, and he put his gun down. So there's a lot of history behind me, and what I'm about to say is very, very important. And don't take it personal, but do take it with a grain of salt, because it's really important. My first question, Dave, is this. I'm not an American. I'm a Tetuan Lakota Sioux from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, from originally out of Wounded Knee. My question to Dave and the co-host is, why do people call this land America with the given facts that America is named after a dead man named Americo Vespucci in the woman's aspect of America? The spellings are two different spellings. One is AMERIGOAMERICA, America, and Americo. The other one is the corporation America went bankrupt 4 times, and the latest one is 1933, the United States bankrupt. So the corporation America is bankrupt too, and it's only a 10-mile radius. There's 564 federal recognized tribes, and this land is under treaty, but it's never mentioned anywhere. And slowly but surely, the white man's government is trying to wipe the Indians off the land instead of share the land through drugs, alcohol, suicide, and poverty. And some of the best judges and lawyers, they know about the United States Constitution, Article 6, Clause 2, where it states treaties are supreme law of the land. But yet we have judges in local and counties that are neglecting treaties to the highest levels. We have police officers and lawyers who don't know what a treaty is. And so my question is, why aren't these being taught? However, the military knows what a Paris Treaty is, but doesn't teach that to the rest of the people.
Okay. Let's start with your question was, why aren't these things being taught? Give me four examples in our lifetime of treaty violations to the indigenous peoples.
Okay, the first treaty violation is health care. Every Indian nation was supposed to have free health care.
Really?
Obamacare? Yes, really. Look on our treaties. It's mentioned there. We have free health care. We're all supposed to have free homes instead of molded, run-down homes with black mold, like black mold, condemned homes, and paying rent on them. We're not supposed to have those. Our food is supposed to be taken care of. Education is supposed to be taken care of. Sorry,
so,
go ahead.
No, let me make sure I understand correctly. You started this thing by saying you're not an American. And I assume when you say that you mean you are a member of a separate nation from America. Am I right?
America is not even a country, though. America is named after a dead man named America.
I don't care who Romania is.
See, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing is you don't care. And
no,
what I'm saying is...
Listen to me. It's my turn now, okay?
Okay.
It matters not to the general discussion of this treaty violation whether the guy that America was named after is dead or alive. And it matters not whether we spelled his name right when we named the country. And it matters not any of that, okay? What matters is you contended to me when you started this discussion that you were not an American. You can't contend to me that America doesn't exist because I am an American. I happen to know America exists because I am an American. You can't contend to me that the Baptist religion doesn't exist because I am a Baptist, okay? So forget all that craziness. I'm assuming when you tell me that you are not an American, and that's a legitimate statement, okay, if you consider yourself a member of a different nation, is that your stand? You are a member of a different nation?
My stand is that this land, if you can show us a bill of sales for the allotted lands that you claim to call America, then I'll tell you that this is the American country. But there is no bill of sales.
Well,
for the land, period.
There isn't a bill of sale for the land, and given
so, how can it be America?
Given your definition of this not being America, then there is nothing. There is no nation in the world. All right, because nobody in the world that calls themselves a sovereign nation bought their land. You didn't buy this land.
No, it was given to us freely by the Creator.
Okay.
The one you call Almighty God.
How did that happen?
Okay.
You walked over the land bridge from Russia and said, "This is the promised land, thank you, God." Is that how that happened?
Each of us have our own territory. Like Europe has white people, Africa has black people, Chinese have yellow people. And this land once had 300 million Indians on it. And those 300 million Indians are dead.
Okay, Okay, that's fine. It once had slaves.
Hey, let me weigh in here, Dave. I've got an interesting
question
for you. You know, some of the things, tell me your name again. I want to be able to, tell me your name again.
My name, my English name is Joanne Spotted Bear. You can't find me on Facebook.
That's fine.
My
Joanne,
Lakota
I,
name
I'll call you Joanne
is,
or I can, but my question
Lakota
is,
name
I want to kind of look at, it's interesting, I can draw some parallels today, some interesting things about, and we can learn some lessons about some things that governments do well, governments don't do well. I want you to know that, by the way, that when the group of some of the English that came to this continent actually purchased their land. That's on record. That's interesting. That's just an interesting tidbit and a bit of trivia.
From
but there was a man that said, you know, I'm not gonna stay here unless I can purchase it, or I'm not gonna. And so he actually purchased land, and so that is on record. And that's just in one colony in one little small area. But I want to draw some parallels about what government has done in history and what government is doing now. Joanne, we find that government has become oppressive to its own people here, just as it's been oppressive to people in other generations. That's what governments do. Our founding fathers, and yes, they were white men, but they were here and they were, for the most part, born here. But they tried to put together a government in which they could control. You know, they had just fought a revolution, and they wanted to put together a government to try to limit government. And as I look at what the government has done in many cases, in some cases to your people, I can see that government, there's a lot of things that they don't do very well. You mentioned the food. Yes, government made promises. They do a poor job of providing food, providing health care, government under this system, if we have it right, would do very few things. But I just see the parallels today, and there are a number of people who have agencies of our government, whether it be the EPA or in some cases ATF and IRS and other things. You know, we're finding that they're in some cases oppressing citizens of this government. And we find that very, you know, troubling, and we find it alarming. I don't think you find it alarming because you've grown up hearing about oppression of a different kind, of a different time, and it's not new to you. But in this generation today, what we have to do is to figure out how to live on this land together. I'm convinced that even though I have my name on a title to some land here in Missouri, I'm just borrowing it. It's not really mine. Now, I may be able to pass it on to my children, and they may be able to pass the ownership or the title on, but technically, if we look at this creation, like you started telling us about, we're all here just temporarily, and we're all just here as stewards, and we're all just here borrowing some time. And in some cases, we're borrowing some property. And we don't know the history of your people probably as well as we should. Our schools are not doing a very good job of teaching our own history since the American Revolution, so they're certainly not teaching the part that they'd like to forget. But I think we have to learn in our generation how to go forward and how to live together in this country that most of us feel comfortable calling America. I'm troubled that you don't feel comfortable calling in America, but I think I understand why it's the case.
Okay, Joanne, what do you suggest then that we do to move forward, or are we going to continue to live in the last 200 years ago?
No, we need to start telling the truth. If the education in the school systems aren't working, then we need to preach, walk our talk. the reason I called this radio station is not to just walk my talk, but I do a radio show here in Reno, Nevada, with famous country and western singer Lacey J. Dalton on Wednesdays. And that's going nationwide, and it's also going viral worldwide. And I do other radio stations. One, they're asking me to go down to Hollywood and do a radio show down there, and one in Texas and one in Minnesota. And the thing that I'm trying to get here is us Indians, we know that the government has screwed up, and they screwed up big time. And they put us on reservations, and they try to kill off all of our people with smallpox, guns, wars, and death. Today, they're killing our people off by using the XL pipeline, alcohol, drugs, and failing in education. There's got to
I want
be
to address
a,
that,
so
Joanne.
Time.
Joanne, if I, this is Keith, and if I could just address one thing that you said, and I don't disagree with much of what you said because the history bears a lot of it out. But on the other hand, I want to point to some American, I want to point it to some Native Americans who have risen above the tide. I want to salute all the Native Americans who have fought for their country, and they're great warriors before and generations before, and there's some great warriors who have fought in Afghanistan and Iraq and First World War and Second, who were Native Americans, and in some cases came back and weren't treated any better when they came back than they were when they left. But I hope that we can move every generation a little closer to treating each other like we'd like to be treated. But, you know, there are some great Native Americans who don't play the victim any longer, and they have risen above to another level, and they've become great in their own right. Now, I will say that I've been around this United States to some degree, and I've seen the poverty, I've seen the alcoholism, I've seen, you know, what you're talking about. This mentality that they, you know, we might get a check on Friday and go to, and we would blow the entire check before Saturday afternoon, you know, that's not just Native Americans. There's a lot of folks who have that mentality. We've got to educate, but in some cases it's generational. It's a very much of a challenge to overcome.
So, I didn't realize, you're from India, are you, Joanne?
No, I'm from Wounded Knee.
Oh, because
I
heard you call yourself Indian, and Indians are people
that's what you guys know us as, Native American Indians.
Yeah.
You don't know us by Tetuan. You never heard of the government never said, these are Tetuan Lakotas or these are the Snake Valley Indians. They never said that. They just said Native American Indians. So, you know, and that joke you just cracked, it's kind of a jab in the side, so to speak.
I know.
But the reality is, let's get truthful here.
It's not any more a jab in the side or any less truthful for you to call you an Indian than for us to spell Amerigo Vespucci's name wrong. That's all I'm getting at is what we've got here is a pot calling the kettle black in that case. But
it is black because this is not your land. It's a lie, and so long as you live in a lie, it's going to be a lie.
Are you suggesting to me that the people indigenous to this continent, the people that were here when the white man arrived, climbed out of the bogs in Nebraska as one-celled animals? No, you came here too.
No, we were here. Okay, we're not the ones that came on the ship begging for food.
Right, that's right. That's absolutely correct. You're not the
absolutely
ones who came
right
on the ship begging for food.
We were here originally.
You are not the ones who came on a ship begging this food, but you began your segment on this show by telling me that you are the people who today beg for food.
Well, we have to. I mean, it's like, okay.
No, you don't have to.
Let me share something with you.
Okay.
I have land in North Dakota.
Great.
I have gold and I have a oil and electricity that is on my land. And most people who have oil and electricity on their land are pretty wealthy people. I do not get a dime of that oil or electricity that's on my land sitting in North Dakota. How do you think that makes me feel?
Why
as
is,
a
why
true
is that?
Indigenous of
why
this land.
Why is that, Joanna? Why is that,
because
Joanna?
Of that paper called the Papaw Bull that the United States government used from the Department of Interior down to the BLM that is based off of them treaties and that Papaw Bull that started in 1059 before Christ by the Pope that was the alphabet was stole from the Africans. The Africans started with the alphabet.
Okay.
I mean,
right.
It just goes back and back and over and over.
You're getting crazy now, Joanna. Do you own a piece of land that you paid money for?
I don't. Okay, the land I own is all indigenous people who were here before the ship ever landed.
Okay.
Yes, I have land here. Yes,
okay.
There is gold, there's an oil well and electricity that is coming off of my land today. There is things that the BLM and the Department of Interior did not tell the people. That's why I ask you, do you have a bill of sales for the land that you're on, a legitimate one from the Indian people?
Yes. Oh, no, I don't have a bill of sale from the Indian people for the piece of land that I own. No, I don't. Because I didn't buy the piece of land that I own from any Native American people. I bought the piece of land that I own from another white man who bought it from another white man who bought it from another white man whose great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather may have killed your great-great-grandfather for. And I'm not paying you for that. You know,
okay,
what happened? What happened between our seven great grandfathers has nothing to do with you and me. Okay.
It has everything to do with today because that is part of history.
It has everything to do with today because of that, the American Indian, in your mind, certainly not in my mind, and I believe certainly not in Keith's mind, and I believe certainly not in most people's mind, but in your mind, the American Indian is so weak that he lets white people hold him down and pour liquor down his throat and shoot heroin in his arms, and he can't get a job. Is that right? That's what you've said.
You know, I'm going to stop you right there.
No, that's what
you said. I'm
going to
stop you right there. I'm going to stop you for a second. When I hear people say what you just said, my first thought is this ungrateful son of a bitch. Our people have died. And I wish all of our Indian people were dead. And I wish this land was filled with oil so you guys can eat what you killed. And I hope to God that when you guys die, that you're going to eat and live what you...
You said, and I've put you on mute now so that people can hear what I say for a second. You, Joanna, you said that I was destroying your people with alcohol, and you said that I was destroying your people with drugs, and you said that I was destroying your people with all of these maladies, okay? You said that. Before anybody said anything, I gave you almost 15 minutes of uninterrupted talk, and you said all those things. You said that the American Indian, is too weak to stand on his own two feet, and that I was destroying your people with all of those things. Do your people, do you not have free will? Do you not have the ability to stand on your own two feet? Are you telling your people that they're too stupid or too lazy to stand up and make something of themselves? Now go.
Okay. First off, our ancestors, They never wanted alcohol or drugs on this land whatsoever at all. They told your guys' government that. And the government did it anyways.
We're talking about today.
Okay, but the past has everything to do with today. Just like Mexico bringing in drugs with Colorado. Where did they get their marijuana from in the middle of wintertime?
They get it from, because the person who fires up a stick of weed and drives his car off a cliff is responsible for that. Not some Mexican drug lord. The person who sticks heroin, the white man who sticks heroin in his arms and jumps off a 15-story building, pays the price, and that's great. I don't have a problem with that. He made a choice. Now, I didn't come there and hold anyone down and pour liquor down their throat. I don't happen to agree with you that American Indians are useless people who get liquor poured down their throat by white people. I don't happen to agree with you that American Indians are too stupid to make any other choice but to be drug addicts when the white man comes walking in with a cache of heroin. I don't happen to agree with you on those things. I happen to know a lot of Native American people who are highly educated, who are leading their communities, okay? You're the one who said that that was a problem. Now, why is the fact that that's a problem for you my fault?
I never said it was your fault. Let me share something with you. And the cause and the effect, okay? In 1874, the one that's in the history books a lot is Chief Red Cloud. 1874, Chief Red Cloud sold his land. 1874, Chief Red Cloud should have had no say in territory whatsoever at all, period. In 2001, Chief Red Cloud's grandson, Oliver Red Cloud, was honored at the United Nations. They did not know that his grandfather had sold his land and had no say. Everything east of the Missouri River was supposed to go to the Europeans. Anything west of the Missouri River was supposed to be Indian territory. Now, the treaties, they were signed on a mutual agreement that there would be no more wars. Now, this stuff we're talking about is silent wars that are not mentioned in anywhere, not in grade school, high school, colleges, only upon request in the universities.
Okay. So?
Okay. So what that does is it takes out a lot of history, a lot of history that should be told. Instead of hiding something, bring it out. Like, okay, Obama. Let's talk about Obama. Nobody likes Obama today because, number one, he's Muslim. Number two, he's from Kenya. Number three, he's trying to avoid the amendments. And the list just goes on. And as for indigenous people, we can say, oh, yeah, he's doing good. That's what he's supposed to do. He's a indigenous of a land, and that's what they do. And people will say, no, what about our amendments? What about our Second Amendment, our rights? Well, we have rights, too.
Yes, you do. I mean, as long as you call yourself an American, you have rights.
No, if I called myself a Lakota, I still have a right.
I'm sorry, but you just told me at the beginning of this show that you're not an American.
Exactly.
Then you have
I'm
no rights.
I'm not American, but
then,
I'm an indigenous
no,
of this.
Then you have
no,
you have no rights
have
covered
no
by
rights.
The by the Constitution of the United States. You have no rights covered by the Constitution of the United States if you're
it's
not an American.
Because of the 1933 Bankruptcy Act, everything was turned over to the United Nations. That means you ain't got no rights either.
No, everything wasn't turned over to the
Everything was turned over to the United Nations in 1933 during the United States bankruptcy. As a matter of fact, even today, the United States is borrowing money from Iran. Imagine that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I know that because I am on the UN page. I hear about these things daily. I get firsthand knowledge of it from the ambassadors of the world.
And you're suggesting that we all need to educate ourselves on the U.S. being taken over by the United Nations in 1930 what?
No, they're going to start taking it over as they're doing right now. 1933, everything was turned over 12 years before the actual building went up. Yes.
Now, 12 years before there was a United Nations, in fact.
The actual building, yes.
No, 12 years before there was a United Nations, in fact.
The building.
United
yes.
Nations became the United Nations in 1942.
12 years before that building went up.
Okay, so 12 years before there was a United Nations, we turned the United States over to United Nations.
The bankruptcy, there's bankruptcy in 1933.
And we turned the United States over to the United Nations.
12 years before the building
was,
went up.
12 years before there was a United Nations.
Before the building, not the United Nations Assembly.
Okay. When did the United Nations Assembly become a thing?
What's a thing?
When was there a United Nations Assembly?
Okay.
In what year did there become a United Nations?
That part don't really interest me. The part that interests
no,
me is
it doesn't
that
really
the United
you
States of,
it doesn't really
of America went bankrupt in 1933. That was the most recent, and everything was turned over to the United Nations.
It doesn't interest you because the fact of the matter is the United Nations came into existence in 1942, and you want to try to educate me about a bankrupt United States being turned over to the United Nations 12 years earlier. That's why it doesn't interest you. And you come on here and tell me that
to be educated. Listen to this then. The 1933 Bankruptcy Act to turn over all offices, agencies, and departments to the receiver of the bankruptcy, and all laws and statutes became copywritten under international law. The United States is practicing corporate policies, not law. You further need to know that when tribal councils become incorporated, they gave up their right to self-govern and now rule underneath underneath man's law.
Joanna, thanks for calling.
So, yes.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate your call. It's been interesting. All right, Keith. Let's see. What were we talking about?
Hey, I enjoyed that to some degree. I mean, I just saw some similarities. You know, our government has never, you know, and she goes, we need to start telling the truth. And I was saying, well, didn't you know that our president got selected as a lie of the year last year? and everything that they used to sell Obamacare, every single item of sales pitch is turned out to be a lie. So there's a lot of similarities, you know. Government is an institution that can't be trusted, and that's why our founding fathers tried to limit it. They worked, they went to great lengths to try to create a government that had checks and balances and that could be limited.
Yep.
And that
could be, to the maximum extent possible, trusted and controlled. We're going to take a quick break. We've only got about 29 minutes left, so I want to take this break, get it over with. I want to get back here. I want to review real quickly, folks, the call for action from last night on the articles of impeachment. Then we're going to keep Keith around. I want to go over one more time Tuesday's hearing. I want to get you at least the phone numbers that you need and remind you of how to email. And I want to remind you of some other things before we call it a night.
Five to one, baby. One in five. No one here gets out of-
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Alrighty, I just absolutely am amazed by the people who act, and Keith got this term right. I was reaching for it when I was talking to Joanne there, but people who act part of spokesman for the victim class always end up trashing their own class, their own constituency. You know, you listen to Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, and what they're saying over and over and over again is black people and minorities are too stupid to go down the street and get an ID card. You know, this is, and it just happens that way all the time, and Joanna made the same mistake. You know, we are helplessly being taken over by drugs and alcohol that white people are pouring down our throats and shooting in our arms because we're too weak or too stupid to do anything else but drink alcohol and take drugs. And you know, if you're a Native American, you need to be infuriated by that kind of talk. I mean, you need to be absolutely pissed off if you're a black American and you hear the people who claim to be speaking for you say, well, hell, you know, black people got no ID cards. I don't get it. I'll never get it. I'll never understand it. Okay, look.
Well, Dave, I tried to give her some credit, and there are some great Native Americans and they're great warriors, and I tried to let her know that what she was talking about, there's some folks that don't fit in her category. You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's some, and you're exactly right. That I've noticed that, and when you mentioned that, those two names, Jesse Jackson, and they came to my mind the same time you said them. That's exactly the same thing.
Okay, look.
Well, I wonder if we have. I hope we have some. We still have some listeners tonight, Dave.
I think we probably do. Listen,
I bet we do.
Last night we talked to Mike Moon, and I want to just briefly review. And when I say briefly, I'm talking about 2 or 3 minutes. But Mike's article of impeachment, H.R. 476, sits now, as of this week, in the House Judiciary Committee. We need that brought up for a hearing, and we need it brought up for a hearing quickly. We've got to get that that passed, and we've got to get it over to the Senate this session, and the clock is running down on this session. The Senate will not vote on it. An article of impeachment is finished when it passes through the House. What the Senate will do after that is they will then conduct the trial. They will not conduct the trial in the state of Missouri, but they will choose a panel of judges to conduct the trial. The actual impeachment itself, that is the indictment, the call to trial, comes from the House of Representatives.
Is that Stanley Cox? Stanley Cox from Sedalia?
Is
judiciary?
Yep.
Yeah.
So Stanley Cox needs to be called and emailed, 573. Get your pens back up. Here we go. Stanley Cox, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y, Cox, common spelling, C-O-X, 573-751-9774. This is an urgent call to action. You need to be calling these offices a couple of times a week. You need to be emailing these people a couple of times a week and saying, we'd like this bill to get a fair hearing. Just like every other email, it's stanley.cox@house.mo.gov. The vice chair there is Kevin Elmer. Kevin, common spelling, K-E-V-I-N, dot Elmer, E-L-M-E-R. He's at 573-751-3833. I'm not going to read the whole list again. And spell out their names. A couple of people from the committee that we talked about earlier in the show are on this committee as well. Todd Richardson, who's vice chair of laws, general laws. Nick Marshall, who has himself sitting before this committee, an article of impeachment having to do with the gay marriage edict. Elijah Haar sits on this committee. There are good people on this committee, but my nose count on this committee is not quite as optimistic as it is over in general laws. I believe that there was an open attempt to sabotage this by the speaker by choosing this committee, and I'd like to see you be the folks that keep that from happening by writing these people until it happens. Call those phone numbers. Email those people. Go to house.mo.gov. You'll come to the House of Representatives page. Click on committees. Find the Judiciary Committee and find there the names of everyone on that committee. Email them at firstname.lastname@house.mo.gov. We need this hearing. We need to get this thing out to the House floor. We need this hearing, and we need it fairly quickly. This is a committee with a lot on its plate. They'll try their best to not even bring this up. So get on that, please.
Dave, I was going to ask you a question. We talk about one of the marshals. Was there a marshal that also had filed articles on another matter?
Yeah.
Is that Nick Marshall who's also on that committee?
It is.
Or is that a different marshal?
Nope, that's him. Yeah.
That should be a positive, I would think.
It's a positive. I think that's a positive, and he's certainly a yes-nos in that count if we ever get a hearing and a vote in committee. No, that's an absolute positive. I think Elijah is a positive. We'll see. He has some kind of political ambitions which might put him on the fence. That's the problem with these articles of impeachment, is anyone who has political ambitions, anyone who wants to hang out in Jefferson City for a while, they're not likely to be too excited about this. And I don't get it. And I'm not going to beat that dead horse. I mean, we talk to Mike every Friday night, so you all know how I feel about that. It's H.R. 476, Article of Impeachment. This is, of the three articles of impeachment currently sitting before the committee, sitting before the committee now. This is, in my mind, the one that Mike Moon has sponsored, is, in my mind, the most, I don't want to say important, but the most relevant, and that is the article of impeachment that states that the governor has failed miserably in his constitutional duty by not calling as quickly as possible. In some cases, it's been a year, for a special election to fill empty House and Senate seats. Politically, of course, there are seats that he emptied himself in several cases by taking Republicans and appointing them to executive branch offices to empty those seats, to do away with the supermajority, and then leave those seats empty. The net result is that more than a quarter of a million Missourians have no representation in Jefferson City for as much as a year. Gross dereliction of duty, and this article strikes right at the heart of the representative government, of a representative republic. Now, I want to leave that alone. We talked about that extensively last night. We're going to talk about it again next Friday and every Friday with Mike Moon until it happens. But we want to get back to
the night. I visited with Mike the other day, and I said, what we should do, he should just file a bill that said the people in those districts, if they have went, 9 months without any representation, we believe in no taxation without representation, so we could put some meat on it by just saying people who went for X number of months without representation didn't have to pay their 2014 state income tax, and they'd probably get some action on that. But
there you go, that would do it. Okay, so I'm going to leave that behind, and we're going to move back to a summary of tonight. There are two bills that we've talked about with Keith in the past. One is HCR 41. That is a call to convention. That is Missouri's call to the United States legislature, asking them to call a convention of states. And then there's HB 2036, which is, it defines how delegates are selected and commissioned. HCR 41, the actual, I'm sorry?
And restrained, if that would be
yes,
necessary.
Yes, and restrained, right. HCR 41 is the actual call to convention, and it sits in the General Laws Committee and is having a hearing noon Tuesday in Room 7 at the Capitol. Tell us again, Keith, then the highlights here, and by that I mean where do people go to find out about it? Where do people go to you said you had some kind of a carpooling resource going on?
Right.
Where do people go to find out about that? How do people get their voice up there if they can't physically be there? Just really quickly review what we've gone over tonight for folks who just joined in. I'm sitting here looking at the listener lines, and I see that there are, in fact, people who have just joined in. They probably heard about what was going on over here. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, just once again, if you haven't gone on to conventionofstates.com, take action and actually join. And that doesn't mean somebody's going to call you and say you have to be somewhere. You're just saying when you join that you want to keep up with this issue. You want to keep up with what's going on with this issue. And by doing that, you'll receive all statewide messages about hearings like we've talked about this evening and other things, and you'll be kept up to date. If you want to learn about as much as you can about Convention of States, that's still the right website. Just click on another tab. Click on Learn, and there's lots of a number of resources for you to help get more familiar with this process. And really, education is the key to removing any baseless fear, is what I call it. And there's been so much information out there for decades about this process that's just based on poor scholarship. It's been based on agenda-driven literature that has no basis in history. And so you want to get the real information. You go back to original sources and so on. And once again, if you want to be at the Capitol early as you can on Tuesday, the first, the hearing's at noon in hearing room number 7. But, I encourage you to spend the morning in the Capitol. It'd be plenty early. Get a good parking spot.
Eating.
Where did it get? Dave was more interested in the food, and that's okay. But there's lots going on there. Learn the lay of the land and make yourself, don't be a stranger. Self-governance means that we all have to be involved. And if you'd like to be there and you don't have a ride, you can post that on Missouri Liberty Amendments Project. Now, we can't guarantee that somebody's going to pick up on that, but if I see it and I know somebody in that area, I'm going to pass that on. I'm sure other folks will do the same. We may even do what we can to get Dave Court there. You know, we'll do the best we can.
Okay. Okay, that's General Laws Committee. And listen, I'm telling you, even if you are going to be there, be part of this movement that starts tonight and tomorrow morning. Caleb Jones, 573-751-2134. That's Caleb Jones. He's the chairman. 573-751-2134. Todd Richardson is the, you know what, I'm reading the wrong list here. That's not judiciary. Judiciary is Stanley Kaw. No, you are in
Caleb
general
right.
laws.
You're right.
Yeah,
Caleb,
you're right.
Right.
It is Caleb, because you're in general laws. Todd Richardson is the vice chair. 573-751-4039. 573-751-4039. That's Todd Richardson. I'm not, again, going to go down through the whole list of about 14 names here, but go to house.mo.gov, click on committees, go to, in this case, you want General Laws Committee. It's a standing committee. Get all the members there, and in every case, once again, as a reminder, their email address is firstname.lastname@house.mo.gov. I've given you the two prominent phone numbers. Now, in both cases, aside from emailing these members, and I don't want to try to dissuade you from calling them all, but at least send an email to the members of the committees. Call the chairman and vice chairman. But
Dave,
in addition to
that,
I
was going to say, if they go on conventionofstates.com, and many people have already, and they know that as a regular call to action, we've included that information in that letter.
Okay.
Actually, it comes to you as an email a couple times. And in one case, we actually gave all of those in a format which they could copy and paste right into their email in one stroke. Email all those folks if they want to do that, or they can personally do it one at a time, whichever way they'd rather do it. But
okay, good. And so your Facebook page for action is Missouri Liberty Amendments Project. Keith says
exactly.
sometimes you have to put in all four words to find it. So it's Missouri
spelled out. Yep.
Liberty Amendments Project. If you can't spell Missouri, then we don't need you. Let me point you to the other website. It is conventionofstates.com. Now I'm gonna emphasize the fact that when we talk about this frequently, we say Convention of the States. The website is not got the word the in it. It's Convention of States. Now, of course, in the website name, in the URL, that's all one word. It's all run together. Conventionofstates.com. That's the other website that Keith talked about tonight. Keith, I want to thank you, and I also want to thank Joanna Sugar Bear for coming along tonight and livening things up a bit. But I want to especially thank you for your insight. I want to thank you for your hard work, and I want to thank you for the time you spend with us. I know that you're a busy man, and that it's not always easy to come along and spend time with us, and I want to tell you how much I always appreciate that. And I want to let you know once more, and as I hope you already know, that you are welcome here anytime. We're here Friday nights and Saturday nights from 7 to 9, folks, and we will talk with you any night you call in, Keith. So the door is always open for you, and we're with you in trying to get this thing off the ground. You got any parting words?
I do. You know, I talked to a lady I respect a lot this week on the radio, and she constantly says, I'm afraid. And I just thought more and more about that today, I mean, after we got off that was done. And we just have to quit being afraid. And I don't want to offend anyone, but I want you to think about this. to me, to be afraid of this process, you know, we're talking about men who had just come out of the 8 years of a bloody revolution. If they were here today and got to hear us say they were afraid, if we got to visit with the people who got in a boat and went across the Delaware in a frozen river, you know, to fight men who were, you know, going to take their lives in an instant, we say we're afraid. We have no reason to be afraid. We need to get rid of the fear.
Reason? We have no right.
No right, no reason. We have, me it's disheartening when I hear that, because that it just seems almost un-American. I don't want to offend someone by saying they're un-American, but I'm just saying that it's just hard to stomach that when I look at what people have paid in you know, actual sacrifice. This is not hard. I mean, when you tell me you thank me for my effort, look, this is not about me. This is not about me. This is about the generations who are unrepresented. They're voiceless, and they have the future, and we're about to give them a future with very little hope. We need to get together, stop what we're doing, and plan a strategy. I urge folks to think more about that in the days to come. Think about your kids. This is about them.
Thanks, Keith. You're always welcome, and it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight. Okay, folks, that's it. We have a hearing Tuesday. Good night, Keith. We have a hearing Tuesday. It's very important. There are times when we need to stand up, when we need to be brave, when we need to shout, when we need to fight. But there are times when we need to reflect, when we need to consciously be still. Learn the difference between those times and learn how to be still when it's time.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit?